Albert and Wetton showed that an important part of an organization's identity is its ties to the past, which they called claims of temporal continuity. One type of organization that plays up its enduring historical characteristics are governments at the national, state, and local levels. Evidence is quite prevalent in some places in the world where artifacts of history are well preserved and attract tourists from around the world. But is this necessarily a good thing? And to what extent might remembering the past inhibit one's look into the future? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. What I'd like to do is open with a couple of places which I'm very familiar with, have been to several times, that both of these cities make a tremendous effort to preserve its history, but in different ways and for slightly different reasons. First one I'd like to talk about is Dresden, Germany, which is a place that I really, really enjoyed. And I actually had been to Dresden several times when I was stationed in Germany as a military officer. And I had a chance to watch it grow and transform in the early 2000s as it was recovering and rebuilding itself from the Cold War days. You see, Dresden, of course, was heavily damaged during the tail end of World War II. And some of the buildings were simply left in rubble for during the Cold War. Basically, they were not touched. And so when Germany reunified, a couple of the primary attractions in Dresden were still in a state of utter disrepair. Most notably, the Frauenkirche, which is was the huge church that's almost egg-shaped. It's a very very unique looking structure. It was still left as rubble. Now, when I went to Dresden the first time in around 2000-2001, the Frauenkirche was finally being rebuilt, and they had a massive scaffolding around the entire site where they were literally sifting through the rubble and trying to identify where all the stones actually went in the original structure. They did, in fact, figure it out, which was amazing. When I went back the next time, and I want to say this was around 2006 or 2007, the Frauenkirche had been rebuilt. And it was amazing. It was built exactly, or at least as close as possible, to the original structure. Now, it was built using tan stone. And if you can believe this, if you haven't seen it yourself, it's just amazing. They actually took all of the blackened stones from the pile of rubble, and they placed them in their original places. So what you had was a tan building with black spots marking all of the places where they had figured out where the rubble pieces went. So it was restored in a very unique fashion. Now, you kind of multiply that by just the overall restoration of the entire city. And Dresden is one of the most amazing places for its architecture. Huge, massive, ornate buildings that are colorful and beautiful and wonderful to walk around. And all of them were in the process of being, you know, various stages of restoration when I went there during the 2000s. And not only did they rebuild the physical structure of the city, they organized it so that it could handle massive throngs of tourists. I mean, if you can imagine some parts in the where they call the new city, the Neustadt, they basically now have massive hotels where they can house thousands or tens of thousands of visitors at any given time. They have plenty of places to park all the buses, and getting around the city is like many cities in Germany. Getting around the downtown is really straightforward, very easy. And, you know, they built up, they really did a good job of getting the downtown set up where they can host annual Christmas markets. Dresden's Christmas market is very famous because the area around Dresden is among the places that are famous for Christmas decoration, German Christmas decorations, woodworking, etc. And so not only were they building up the structures, they were sort of recreating slash modernizing the culture. Their Christmas market takes in millions of visitors each year now, and it generally follows the spirit of the Christmas market, but with a lot of more modern sensibilities in terms of varieties of food. There's a lot of wide variety of ethnicities, which I'm sure did not present themselves in the 1600s or 1700s. But you know, it's turned into a very, very significant tourism area. And the same can be said for Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, which is just located a bare half an hour south of where I am. Gettysburg, of course, was famous for the Civil War battle, which proved to be a turning point in the Civil War. And this battlefield site has been remarkably well preserved. And each year there are untold numbers of people who come in. At one level, there are those who come in to walk the ground. And we, you know, in the institution that I'm at, the U.S. Army War College, a staff ride to Gettysburg is a part of the program. And what we do is we bring students down and they actually walk the battlefields, essentially reliving all 3 days. And they use it as an opportunity to learn about not just the tactics of the ground, but also the strategic story. What was going on at the top levels of leadership? What were the conditions that brought about the battle? How did the battle shape the rest of the Civil War? And then the other level is reenactors. There are a very large number of people out there who participate in reenactments where you, without including all of the violence, of course, they actually, you know, stage the major events of the Battle of Gettysburg so that everybody can watch and everybody can learn. The reenactors also recreate the conditions like the bivouacs and the tents and the way that they did food and their equipment and all of that in order to basically be a living testimony to what life was like during that part of the Civil War. So, of course, Gettysburg is another place that brings in large numbers of people for tourism, but also to be, you know, an important historical reminder of an important event in U.S. history. So the good sides of this should be pretty clear, pretty obvious. First, the revenues, the business, the tourism, it's just amazing, you know, how big that is and how much of a boon that is for both of those locations and for a lot of other places, both here in Pennsylvania and across in Europe, in Germany. It also provides good incentive for keeping the historical properties intact. I mean, there's a desire to provide for the upkeep of the beautiful architecture in Dresden because it is so beautiful. All of the buildings are so beautiful, but they, you know, because they're stone, they're huge, they're ornate, they do require a significant amount of upkeep. As for Gettysburg, preservation is of the battlefield. The ground itself is essentially the draw, and the ability to walk the ground essentially as close to the way that, or the places where the troops marched during the battle, is very, very important. So there is that preservation aspect. And then, of course, there's also just the general goodness of keeping history alive. Dresden, has a whole number of, World Heritage sites. And there's a lot of them in Europe, and you go from city to city, These sites really do provide good windows to the past, although the building itself is not really, doesn't really tell the story necessarily. You have to learn more. You have to visit the museums. You have to read the information. But just to be able to see it and be able to picture in your mind what was going on in the past is something that is immensely valuable. And it's terrific to be able to understand greater about where countries around the world, how they developed their culture more than just, you know, what you might read in a school book in the States. So, you know, those are all kind of the good sides, but there are some downsides, and I do want to address some of them because I think some of them, you know, on reflection, I think they're kind of interesting and have some broader applicability. First is the question about sustainability, because as you can imagine, a city that was perhaps designed to house 10,000, 20,000 people in a fairly small confined space is not necessarily well suited for the growth of, you know, 3 to 4 million people flowing through each year. You risk environmental damage. There is a whole range of literature on how tourism, especially large-scale tourism, can bring about exploitation of the local citizens. Poor living conditions or working conditions, in addition to the environmental damage, it also can produce conditions of economic inequality, where all of the money and the welcoming is provided to the guests at the total expense of the ability of the people to sustain themselves. And this is this has been the basis of movements in the past and present to promote ethics in tourism. The one thing I want to bring about, which I think has broader applicability to organizations in general, is the potential of these artifacts of history being the source of misremembering history. Okay. And what I'm talking about there is that you think about Dresden or you think about other locations and you see the pretty parts. I mean, you see the facade that is beautiful, maintained, painted, or what have you. But of course, that is just a very, very small part of the history. And what are all the bad parts? Well, some of the bad parts, when I'm talking about bad parts, let me give you an example of this. And I'm not going to name the country. I'm not going to name the location where this was, but it's more than one place. And you go there and you see the beautifully preserved downtown. And then hidden off to the sides are these special museums which are tucked away in the corner that show how they used to torture their citizens, and some of these other, you know, bad things that were just at the time were just part of life in the Middle Ages or after the Middle Ages. Or, for example, you could go into a downtown where they might have, you know, the whole thing preserved for beauty's sake for the modern audience, and located somewhere near the town hall is one of those, I don't know what you call them, but they're the ones, they're in the Middle Ages where you took a prisoner and you stuck the head and the arms through it and locked the, you know, two pieces of wood clamped down. And they basically froze a prisoner there so that people could throw rotten tomatoes at him. Now, those are presented as sort of like a bit of amusement nowadays. You know, you get little kids going up, laughing, giggling, stick their hand in, stick their head in. And nobody's throwing tomatoes at them, of course, but mommy and daddy are over there snapping pictures away, and it's really cute. Yes, I have done this too with my kids, but never mind. The point of it being that it really can risk causing a bit of a stilted view of what history is being preserved if one is not careful. Certainly in the case of Gettysburg, historical accuracy is critical. If you don't have historical accuracy, you basically lose the value of Gettysburg. And that's why the reenactors put so much time and effort into it. But there is a risk that the story starts to get a little bit misunderstood, and the lessons that are perhaps the real value of trying to preserve these historical artifacts, these historical monuments, these buildings, and et cetera, and the culture gets lost, gets twisted under the pressures of commercialization. This is where now I start to think about organizations of other sorts, you know, moving away from the cities and thinking about businesses, government agencies, other institutions that make or have their ties to their history as a significant part of their identity. And they rely on maybe not necessarily an accurate reading of the history, but some of them will simply try to, just like the buildings, they'll go after the good parts. They'll reach back to the glory days. And when they reach back to the glory days, how accurate was it? Are they just sort of like forgetting the bad parts and remembering what was really good? And then in turn, coming up with an inaccurate and misleading story that is perhaps driving present day change? I know that I have seen this to various levels within organizations that I've served with or consulted with. I'm not saying that it's done with malice. Sometimes it's just simply done because, you know, we're trying to inspire action. But if you have historians among you who know the history better than you do, they'll definitely call you on it and it will become an issue. But of course, not every organization is blessed with a large number of historians, are they? So obviously, you know, we have to be cautious. I mean, there has to be more than a purpose to preserving history other than trying to promote an idealized version of the organization. So what we want to do is we want to preserve the story behind the history, maybe for tourism purposes or for other purposes in which the inspiring message is needed. We can forgive certain inaccuracies, but we ought not lose sight of the big picture, because historical accuracy does serve a very, very important purpose. If we're going to draw our identity, use the past to guide us in the future, we really do have to be careful and be willing to accept the fact that some parts of the past are just not comfortable and not necessarily the message. That way, perhaps, we learn better from the past and we can move forward. And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening and have a great day.